State of the state. As I said, in the US, some places every year they force their president to get up and sort of give an address about where they think things are up to and where we're going in the future. So I wanted to do that for us as we gather to think about the proclamation of Christ in our state of Western Australia. What I'm going to say is fairly personal in a sense. It's my perspective. I haven't sat down with a committee and worked out what to say. And you may agree or disagree, but I hope that what I say might be of value to us as we think about the way in which we individually, but also together, might see Christ proclaimed and people won to him. In my mind, there's been quite a few real encouragements. I began sort of formal gospel ministry in WA 34 years ago, almost 35 now, and things have changed in that time. Things have changed quite a lot. At that stage, I only knew of a handful of churches that were seeking to evangelise people by teaching the Bible. Now, I think probably around WA, there's sort of 70 churches like that. That's actually quite remarkable what God has been doing. The size of some of our churches is growing. People are being won to Christ. There are more people who share our passion for the glory of Jesus, confidence in his word, and love for the lost. And just chatting to people in the last 12 months, I've been very encouraged by the number of pastors who are, for example, taking the Vine Project and in their own way trying to implement that within their church to make disciples who make disciples. I think we've got to do more of that sort of thing, which I'll talk about in a minute. The other thing I think I've been encouraged by is that over the years God has been growing a healthy and productive gospel ecosystem in our city and in our state. It's been great to see Kakawa flourishing. Women's Convention a couple of weeks ago, over 1,400 women joined together. And that's the sort of thing that can only happen because the networking that this is working well. And that's just fantastic. The other things that Kakawa are doing, that's what partnerships can do. Trinity Theological College celebrates its 21st birthday this year. And what an incredible gift to us that has been. Things like CBF, Crew West, AFES, PYGP are all in their own ways trying to build some of that ecosystem. Our churches are really the hubs in the ecosystem. These other things are things that help those hubs flourish, we hope and pray. And that ecosystem is building, and it's really, for me, it's terrific to see the cooperation in that. We're not riven by divisions most of the time. And there is a growing trust between us, I think. That means we can do more of this. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful to God. But, this is a big but, there is a long, long way to go. There's no time, I think, for resting on progress. As I got older, I'm finding I'm getting less patient. I think when I was younger, I thought, I can take the long view. You know, 30 years from now, maybe we'll make some progress. Well, we have made some, but now I'm thinking, well, I might have 10 years to go. I want to see more progress more quickly. That's my problem. God works at his pace, but I want to just scratch that impatience in you. Because most of the people who live in WA are lost in darkness. There's some bright spots. We've got a cluster of churches in the western suburbs, some up the north coast, around Bull Creek and scattered south, some terrific churches in the Great Southern, northwest Australia. There's good churches in many of the towns up there. But even with those bits of light, most of us are struggling to get traction in winning the lost to Christ. There's a trickle. A small trickle. Wouldn't it be great to see a flood? That is God's work, and yet we partner with him in that work. So I want to highlight three areas that I think should be on our agenda for our prayers and thoughts and even working together. Not because I want to flog exhausted labourers to work harder and longer, but to set our sights on what needs doing so that we can pray and work towards it. The first is evangelism. My best guess is that in WA, maybe around 3% of our population knows and trusts the Lord Jesus across all our churches. which means 97% don't. Now, if you imagine that in numbers, there's a bit over 100 of us here. So that means in the population, four of us at max are Christian and saved, and the rest aren't. Which probably means you're not among those four. Sorry, you are, but just for the illustration. Just look around. That's a lot of people, isn't it? It's the majority of people in your street, on the train you catch, if you ever catch a train, sitting in their cars on the freeway, parked in the parking lot. Wherever it is you see people gather together, 97% on average are lost in sin and facing God's wrath and robbing Jesus of his glory. So it's pretty hard to escape the conclusion that evangelism needs to be our number one priority for our prayers, for our labours. Now, we're living in a time, I think, where the gap between a biblical worldview and a secular worldview is widening almost daily, where the gap between Christian culture and lifestyle and the world around us is just pushing further and further apart. And most of us are finding that pretty disorienting. We're comfortable in our Christian bubble, but the rest of the world is just an alien place. We feel like foreigners in our own land, even in our own streets. And there's two obvious responses we can make, which I want to discourage you to. One is just to draw up the drawbridge, batten down the hatches, keep the world out, or we just shout louder to the world saying, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. Or we do both. We just sort of shout from the ramparts. Presuming, of course, that we don't simply cave in and conform. But both of those reactions are not like Jesus, are they? Remember Jesus, even as many people hated him, rejected him, he said to his disciples, look, the fields are white for harvest. That's how he viewed the lost of the world. Not as the enemies, but as the harvest. Sure, they killed him, but they were still the fields white for harvest. It's a love for the lost that needs to inhabit our hearts. I think there's another way. As the culture gap widens, we've got to become like cross-cultural missionaries, don't we? We send people to Indonesia and Jordan and places like that, and when they go, we encourage them to go and study the culture and understand it. We don't send them and say, well, just go and shout as loud as you can the gospel of Jesus in English using idioms that don't fit their culture. We say, no, go and learn the culture. Find out what they're like. What's the plausibility structures within their culture? And I take it that's what we need to do ourselves. We are in a cross-cultural situation in our rapidly secularising culture and our multicultural cultures. There is no monochrome culture in Australia. There's lots of different pockets who think about things different ways. It's complex. And so if we're going to be missionaries, not shouting at them in our words and our idioms that they'll almost certainly misunderstand, but getting inside their mindsets, which often they're not conscious of, their ways of understanding reality, the plausibility structures of their worldview. And I think that means if we're leading God's people, we've got to be able to do some of that for our own ministry and evangelism, but also so we equip our people to do it. Now, I'm not saying we all need to or even can become cultural experts. We're all amateurs. Well, sorry, most of us are amateurs. I'm certainly an amateur. But there are some experts around who can really help us. Just to name a few that you might tap into, someone like Tim Keller has been brilliant, I think, at thinking about the culture he is in and bringing the gospel to bear. I just read a simple book by Mark Sayer last year called Disappearing Church. And at the front of that, he's got a little 8-point summary of what expressive individualism, which is our dominant secular culture, actually believes. Terrifically helpful for me as I think, how do I connect the gospel of Jesus to the average person I meet day by day who's not a Christian? Our own Steve McAlpine writes brilliant stuff in his blogs. Don't always agree with everything he says, but he gets me thinking and understanding the world I live in and the people I'm trying to reach. And Dan Patterson can help us, I think, in that forum in a couple of weeks' time. But we need to be not simply pastors who evangelise, but pastors who equip God's people to evangelise. Equip them to make disciples of all nations and all cultures, including our secularised neighbours and our Muslim neighbours and the others who inhabit our multicultural space. That's actually our job, isn't it? We've got to lead the charge and coach the teams that we need. I don't think this is the day of mass evangelism. We won't get crowds to come to the Domain Stadium or something to come and hear a Billy Graham. Now, it's the days where we need every Christian to be a wavefront, a bridgehead into their family, into their workplace, into their school, into their neighbourhood, into their sporting club, into their train carriage, into whatever places they intersect with the lost. Now, imagine if they actually were. Imagine that each person sitting in our churches each Sunday was seeking to share the gospel with their neighbours and friends and families each week, praying for them and gradually being equipped to have the conversations that actually do make some sense and seeing God's Spirit work through his gospel. It'd actually be quite significant, wouldn't it? Only 3%. If each of us only talked to 3 people a year, that would mean 10% of the population was hearing the gospel in an effective way, in a way that could actually cross the cultural barriers and see people understand and by the Spirit come to faith. It's not happening yet, is it? But I think that's what we need to be doing if we're going to do it. Latest McCrindle research says that 26% of Aussies are open to considering Christianity. Now, some of them are sort of open. Others are open. But 26%, that's 1 in 4, actually report that they're open. And yet, I don't think we're talking to the 1 in 4 who are open, let alone the other 3 in 4 who may not be so open. And it's interesting, on the campus I work on, and uni campuses are often the sort of the canary in the mine. They show us where we're going. This year we've had more people, more just normal Aussies, coming and saying, I'd like to find out about Christianity. Even as the temperature against us feels like it's rising, the sort of ignorance and curiosity is starting to kick in a little bit, I think. I hope and pray that that flourishes and continues. So what do our people need in order to evangelise? I think 4 things. Sorry about lists. We've had lots of those. We need love for the lost, don't we? That's where it starts. Love for those for whom Christ came. We need courage. Courage to speak up. And our people need the courage not to be silenced by the huffing and puffing that they hear around them and see on Facebook, but just courage to say, yeah, I'm a Christian. I believe Jesus is the Lord of the world. I believe that he came to save us, even you. Just to speak. To do that, I think we need confidence. They need confidence in the gospel of God, that God shines his light into darkness as we explain and share and preach Christ as Lord. And lastly, and this is a little bit out of left field, I think we need to choose to suffer for the sake of Christ. One of the funny things I think about suffering, I think I'm normal in this, that if I get stuck in a situation where suffering suddenly is in the offing, I pike out quickly. But if I know it's coming and I decide when it comes, I'll put up with it, I can sometimes put up with it. So a dentist is like that, isn't it? You know, if the dentist just walked into my room and said, I'm going to drill into your teeth, no way, I'd be out of there. But I sit in the waiting room, psyching myself up, choosing beforehand to suffer, I'll go through it. And I think the suffering that comes in telling others of Jesus, it's going to come in some places. Unless we decide beforehand that we're willing to suffer, when it does come, we'll just wuss out. But if we've already decided that, yes, Jesus, I will suffer for you, then when it comes, I'll still speak up, even though it might cost me. I think there's a choice to make to suffer, because it is coming, if it hasn't come already. So, brothers and sisters, I think that's what we need our churches to become. And many of our churches aren't really like that at the moment. Some of our churches are somewhat like that, but everywhere I go, it feels like there's still a long way to go to be like that. That's why I'm excited that many of us are having a crack with something like the Vine Project, because it's about changing the culture, which is about changing people to become those who want to make disciples of others. And that's where it starts. It's a process. You might have a better way of doing it than the Vine Project. Great, go and use it. But it's a process that's going to take some time, but unless we choose to buy into it and work at it and pray for it, it probably won't happen. And if we're the pastors, if we're the leaders, then gospel-shaped leadership for us must involve us helping our churches to become like that. That is our job. So whatever you use, please don't do nothing towards this. That's my encouragement. Please do something to move your people towards being disciples who make disciples of others. And I think we can help each other to do that. You know, maybe even just getting together with two others in your neighbourhood, in this network, covenanting to pray for each other, to encourage each other, to share resources and to rejoice in progress. So evangelism, I think, that's the first thing I want to talk about. The second is planting or repotting churches. Now, the evangelism is something that's got to happen in our churches mainly. The planting is something which is a bit more of an ecosystem. We've been spluttering along for a while, I think, but we've pretty much stopped in the last 4 years. But the need to reach Perth in particular, the vast swathes of places where there are no Bible-teaching evangelistic churches, 60 churches won't do it. We can't reach Perth and WA with only that many. We need churches that are geographically positioned. We need churches that are culturally and ethnically positioned to reach the lost. What can we do towards that? We obviously need people who can church plant, people who can lead plants. In fact, we need gospel workers of all sorts in all sorts of places. Our existing churches are struggling to find the pastors and the leaders that they need in the city and the country. But on top of that, we need people who can plant new churches, which means in our places, we do need to be following Jesus' command to pray that the Lord of the harvest will raise up labourers and be willing to lose them from our little patch. Now, I'm in a very privileged position. I work on a uni campus that has, you know, we've got a couple of hundred people we're in contact with who are young adults thinking about their lives, and I'm underperforming in recruiting people into being gospel workers. But I think most of us are. And we need planters who are people willing to take some risks for God, willing to just have a crack at something to reach the unreached. My perception is that in Perth, money is not the problem. It's people. It's the right people willing to do it, especially the leaders. And I think we need two things with that. We need some churches that drive it, that are big enough, have the vision, the capacity to actually go and do it where I might not be able to. And as that happens, please cheer them on. Please pray for them. So places like Bull Creek are trying to do that. Providence are trying to do that. North Coast is trying to do that. Let's cheer them on. But I think we also can do it, even if I'm a small church. Maybe if I partner with two or three other churches around me, we could do it together. We can do more than you imagine, I suspect, in this area of church planting. Thirdly, ministry to school-aged children. Again, this is a sort of ecosystem issue. My observation of our churches is that not many of our churches have thriving children's and youth ministries. And if we have, they're mainly just keeping the church families happy and their kids Christian. Most of our schools are spiritual wastelands. Religious education is being strangled out either because the schools are opposing it or there's no resources to do it. Most of our state high schools have so few Christians that the Christians don't know any others in the 1,500 kids at their school. That's what they tell me when they come to uni. Most of our church schools have been wasted by liberalism. It's a wasteland. Even the Christian schools are struggling to make much headway. There are some flickering candles, which is great. Perth Children's Ministry Conference, Crew West. A few churches have been terrific at getting holiday clubs going. Some of the mums who just do ministry at the school gates are seeing fruit, and it's fabulous. But it's tiny compared to the number of people in our schools. And so PGP actually has a proposal of at least starting to make some progress on this. We want to create a think tank that will do a few things. Research and sort of predict the likely changes in access to schools over the next 10 to 20 years. Of course, it's changing. To catalogue some of the things that's happening, the resources available, what under God seems to be working. And then to propose some strategies to us for us to consider, both individually and maybe corporately. So it's such a huge need, isn't it? We can't crack this on our own. One church won't crack this. It'll take some corporate effort with a clear strategy. I don't know what the strategies might be. Is it chaplains? Is it getting all our young people to do teacher training and becoming teachers? Is it using retirees to run lunchtime clubs? Is it starting our own schools? I don't know. But we have to think about it. We can't abandon this space, I don't think. Now, I've approached three people so far to head up the think tank, haven't been able to secure anyone. If you think of somebody in your church who's the right sort of person, please come and tell me, because I want to get this off the ground as soon as we can. So there's three areas for your consideration, for your prayers, and in some senses, for your actions. But I remind us, we have this treasure, this gospel, in jars of clay. And it's good to be weak, as we were reminded last night. It's actually good to be weak. It's God's way. He means it to be that way. And we feel weak. I certainly feel weak when I look at the 97%. I just sort of melt and think, can't do anything. But God is brilliant at using weak to achieve his brilliant purposes, to show that the power is his. The gospel of Jesus, the new covenant ministry, has the power to change, to glorify people, but especially to glorify Christ. Under Christ, we can see real progress. We can work at it and see God use even us. Yeah, look around. We're a small, motley bunch. We're not brilliant, but we know Jesus. And together we can do something. And I commend that to you. Thank you.